At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
There are a lot of words that you might expect to hear a president say over and over in a State of the Union address. Words like jobs or freedom, or if it's a Joe Biden speech, folks. But the president last night chose a different word to be the theme of his remarks. He chose the word predecessor.
My predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want. My predecessor came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. He's the reason it was overturned, and he brags about it. My predecessor failed the most basic presidential duty that he owes to American people, the duty to care. I think that's unforgivable. My predecessor told the NRA he's proud he did nothing on guns when he was president. My predecessor and many in this chamber want to take this prescription drug away by repealing the Affordable Care Act. I'm not going to let that happen. We stopped you 50 times before and we'll stop you again.
President Biden did not actually utter Donald Trump's name once during that speech, but he referred to his predecessor more than a dozen times. That was just one of the ways that an animated and, according to nearly every single newspaper headline today, a feisty Joe Biden used his State of the Union to kick off officially this year's general election, to reset his campaign and to kill the narrative that Biden is too old and he's not up to the job. And today, the Biden campaign was hot out of the gates with plans. Plans for barnstorming and blanketing the airwaves and moving the troops to the battlefront. Many, many plans. The president kicked off a campaign blitz with a rally in Pennsylvania, where he and the first lady stopped in Swarthmore to eat pizza at the home of a small business owner. Then he headed for Philadelphia, where he hammered Donald Trump and the Republican Party on the issue of abortion.
MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump want to pass a national ban on the right to choose, period. Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women in America. No clue. They found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot in 2022 and 2023, and they'll find out again in 2024.
President Biden will follow up that speech with another campaign stop tomorrow in Atlanta before heading up to New Hampshire for another appearance on Monday and then on to Michigan for another event on Thursday. That Michigan stop will be the first test of the Biden coalition in that state since 100,000 Democratic primary voters picked uncommitted to signal their opposition to his position in the war in Gaza. But that is not all. At the same time, the Biden campaign is dispatching an army of surrogates to various swing states. Vice President Kamala Harris is in Phoenix tonight for an event on reproductive rights, and tomorrow she will head to Las Vegas for an event focused on Latino voters. Biden cabinet officials will be fanning out across the swing states. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack is headed to Arizona. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is going to Philly. And Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is making stops in Ohio and Wisconsin and Michigan. But President Biden's most aggressive next steps are ones that can be best measured in dollars and cents. Now, the Biden team has already been running ads targeting voters of colors, like ads that promote the administration's support for historically black colleges. But the Washington Post reports today that the president is planning to launch a new $30 million ad campaign with ads on TV and radio and digital platforms running across eight battleground states. Some of those ads are designed specifically to target those key parts of the Democratic coalition, including Black, Latino, and Asian voters. The Post also reports that the Biden campaign plans to hire at least 350 new staffers across those key battleground states. That is more than triple the number of staffers currently employed on the Biden campaign. So the surrogates are fanning out. The field teams are stacking up their clipboards and they're getting ready to knock on doors. The digital team is furiously pasting dark branded laser eyes onto every JPEG they can. And the Biden campaign appears to be deploying every resource at its disposal to stop Donald Trump from becoming president ever again. Joining me now is Jen Palmieri, former communications director for the Clinton 2016 campaign and the Obama White House, and also the co-host of the MSNBC podcast, How to Win 2024. Also with me is the great Michelle Goldberg, opinion columnist for the New York Times. It's great to see both of you guys tonight.
We've never been on together. We're very excited.
Well, history being made this Friday night. Jen, let me first start with you. I think it feels like a very possible moment for the Biden campaign,
You know, like progress and possibility. That was the theme of the speech, and that is there was a lot of progress last night, and we feel like there's a new sense of possibility.
Does a reset truly feel like something within Biden's grasp right now?
Yes, I was feeling pretty good on Tuesday because when you come out of the primary season, you're like, okay, Biden has a ton of money. Trump is, you know, in the negative territory because of all of his legal problems. I was in Detroit last Friday. The Republican convention was canceled because there were fist fights breaking out, right? Like they don't have, and when we came out of the primary season, there's the uncommitted vote, but it was an uncommitted vote. It wasn't a let's vote for Dean Phillips. It wasn't the Minnesota uncommitted team was clear to say Donald Trump's an existential threat. You know, we don't want to do anything to make him be president. And so there really isn't a lot of anti-Biden energy to actually act on in the party.
Or at least it's moderated to not be nihilistic, perhaps.
Yeah, it's moderated by the threat. And then Trump is getting 93% of his voters. Biden's getting 83% of his voters from 2020. That means Biden has room to grow and Trump is sort of tapping out, right? So I feel like, and then he had a great speech. So we all saw it's not just that he can do the job well, he can speak about it well, too. That just gives us reassurance. They have money, they're spending it, they're deploying it. And you're like, oh, right, we're going to have the Biden-Trump fight we thought we were going to have a year ago, not the Biden-Trump fight we were worried about in the last 6 weeks.
So you slept easy last night.
No, because the Katie Britt thing
haunted your dreams.
It's just I couldn't puzzle out what was so disturbing about it, and that kept me. I slept like a half hour in the morning show.
Man.
It was brutal.
Apologies on behalf of the news media that aired it. Michelle, I feel like the Republicans made a grave miscalculation last night by trying to kind of like bait Biden into stumbling, or I don't know what, but he seemed to relish the combat. And I want to play a little bit of sound last night that sort of exemplifies his, you know, his fighting Irish.
In November, my team began serious negotiations with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill? I'll be darned. That's amazing.
Oh, you don't like that bill? Oh, really? Then let's pass it. I thought that stuff just strengthened Biden's hand.
Well, we sort of knew that Biden, you know, I'm someone who's often been extremely anxious about the Biden campaign. I mean, you know, cold sweat, terrifying sleepless nights. Without Katie Britt's response. But nevertheless, we knew, we saw this last year, right? Last year, Biden had these great moments when he was parrying Republicans and kind of coming out on top and showing command of the room. So it's not quite clear why Republicans thought that it would go differently for them this time, unless they have really talked themselves into believing their own propaganda that, you know, he really is a sort of walking corpse that
I think
that that's right. And so they ended up just looking, you know, kind of sullen and caught off guard and also sort of
With James Lankford silently like, mouthing it's true. That's
so
the lead Republican negotiator on the bill that his party is booing. I mean, unbelievable,
right? And you know, and then you had a bunch of people in these ridiculous costumes, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Troy Nels, and you know, they looked like
clowns.
I was going to say they looked shambolic, but yeah, clowns is another way to
put it. Shambolic is the New York Times word.
Clowns is an Alex Wagner Tonight word. I do think, Jen, it's a virtuous cycle, right? Like the stronger he is, the stronger he gets. I mean, even today on the campaign trail and in Philadelphia, like that wasn't the State of the Union. That was just Biden on the campaign trail. And it was a marked difference from how he sounded in previous weeks.
Yeah, you could see it's like that he just feels he has, I think he probably has a lot of self-confidence coming out of last night. And it doesn't mean that he won't make mistakes. And he even made mistakes last night. But I think that there's just and I don't even know that we should expect to see polls improve out of this speech. I mean, I know the president very much wants that. There's something going on in the world right now. Leader favorability ratings are just really low in general. So I don't know that that will really change. It doesn't mean he can't get reelected. People are getting reelected with low favorability ratings. But it just shows us all like, oh, right. Okay. He is actually fine. And just like he was as good, probably better last night than he was a year ago. And that we have faith that the guy that is doing that in March is going to be an effective candidate all the way through November.
I also think the Democrats have a core kind of structural advantage, Michelle, which is that the party truly isn't about the individual. It's about the agenda. I mean, that's what you see in these off-year elections. Joe Biden's not on the ballot, and we can set aside like how that might influence things. But it's not a cult of personality the way the right is. It is a party that cares about reproductive rights and fundamental institutional freedoms and a host of other things that really have nothing to do with the guy in charge, except for the fact that he's the one implementing them.
Right. I mean, and I think that that actually cuts both ways, right? Because
sure.
You don't have this incredibly impassioned cult-like following that is going to turn out for Donald Trump, no matter, you know, not a majority, certainly, but a solid core. You don't have that in the same way. And I do think that there is something to energy. You need energy in a campaign to drag along uncommitted, not even uncommitted voters, but occasional voters, right? Voters who aren't necessarily plugged in. And, so in as much as there is a sense of excitement and momentum, it really helps. And, I remember the Obama campaign, the fact that people felt so, kind of passionately committed to this man really helped. And, this time I think that you're going to have to substitute a passionate commitment to issues. It's why they've made abortion, even though Joe Biden's still doesn't want to say the word abortion, but it's why abortion and reproductive rights are so front and center in this campaign, because we've seen that that's something that people will turn out for over and over again.
Well, and I think that's also the point of the surrogates, right? I think they have to get the message out that this is the Biden campaign is bigger than Biden. It's about these issues. And if he has effective surrogates, I mean, I don't know, Tom Vilsack going to Arizona, no disrespect.
He got a big shout out from you tonight, Tom Vilsack.
That's what we do on this program. The idea that the Biden campaign is really enlisting in earnest messengers seems like an important development. And one would hope and assume that that will extend beyond just cabinet secretaries.
Yeah. And I've never seen the party this united. Rashida Tlaib obviously feels very passionately about wanting a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And what did she do last night? She held up a small sign to protest, right? She did not disrupt the president. She did, it's like we all understand what the stakes are, even as we're concerned about individual issues. So I think that the party is united. There is a very effective cabinet that is well known, because a lot of them ran for president themselves in Democratic circles, phenomenal governors that won state, we won tough races in Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, Michigan and Wisconsin, one word, both of those states, and Pennsylvania. We won tough races in there in 22. They're fresh from battle. They're ready to go back in again. So that is all. It was the same in 2020, right? It wasn't just Biden. It was this big tent. But I do feel proud of him from his performance last night, and not just because he got through it so well and was combative. We were laughing about that earlier. But it was like he was President Biden. He had stepped out from the shadow of the man he worked for, right? He stepped out of from the shadow of the man who of Trump that he succeeded. And you see, he has a real theory. He's middle class Joe. He really does want to stop the slide of the middle class, bring it back. He does have, only he has the experience to lead be the free leader of the world in this really difficult time because of how much experience you know, he's been doing this for 50 years. He met with Indira Gandhi when I think when he was 29 years old, you know? He went
when
to
you
Israel.
Have an Indira Gandhi reference in your back pocket. You've been on the stage for a long time.
So then you feel like it's you know, so hard what he inherited and what he went through, and now you're like, oh, you're like, there he is. Like President Joe Biden with a real theory of how to govern, a real vision of America, and optimistic at a time when even young people find it hard to be, but an older person who's like, I've seen us come back from worse, makes you feel optimistic too.
All right. Well, perhaps you'll sleep better tonight, my friend.
So I think I'm going to be
certain bad things are in the rear view. Jen Palmieri, Michelle Goldberg,
thank
my
you.
Friends, I think let's do it again sometime
soon. Absolutely.
Great. It's great to have you on the show. We have a lot to get to this evening as Donald Trump makes over the Republican Party, installing his personal picks to party leadership, including his daughter-in-law. What happens now? That's next. And later, fanboy meets strongman. We will talk about the right-wing thing for demagogues coming up.
He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be and that's the end of it, right? He's the boss. I didn't know he's a great leader.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Next, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Next, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
With that note, I am going to ask you to join me as recognizing President Trump as our nominee and the next president of the United States. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm not even going to ask for the noes. Okay.
I'm not even going to ask for the nose. That was Ronna Romney McDaniel's final act as chair of the Republican National Committee. What might technically be considered election fraud. Not even ask for the nose. McDaniel officially stepped down today at the RNC's spring meeting after she was boxed out by Donald Trump, in part because she refused to fully embrace the big lie. The man replacing her is Michael Whatley, a passionate election denier, while Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, was officially named RNC co-chair. Other than being a Trump, Lara Trump's qualifications for this role appear to be this.
God does not call the qualified. He qualifies the called. Lara Trump is the embodiment of this truth.
Now that the Trump takeover is complete, the RNC apparently intends to allocate its resources towards election denialism.
We are going to make sure that every single penny of every dollar raised goes towards one goal, which is winning. How do we do that? We have to have election integrity like we've never seen before.
We have also hired and placed election integrity directors in battleground states who are already recruiting and training tens of thousands of volunteers to serve as poll judges, workers, and observers who will act as real-time monitors whenever votes are being cast and counted. And we will do more.
Joining me now is the chair of the Democratic National Committee, Jamie Harrison. Chairman, it is great to see you. I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts about the RNC at this moment, but I do want to start with the idea that their winning strategy, as announced today, is by hiring a core of election integrity poll watchers. What does that tell you about how Republicans think they can win the 2024 election?
Well, maybe they should use those poll watchers to watch their bank account, because what Lara said earlier was that they were going to use all the money to help Donald Trump on his lawsuits. It really is shameful that right now the head of the RNC is an election denier and a grifting in-law. That's exactly what they have right now. So they can use their resources all that they want on those issues. They can use that credit line that they just got because they're broke right now. But bottom line is this. Joe Biden's speech was so good last night that it set records in terms of our fundraising at the DNC and in the campaign. You know, as they say, he ate last night and left no crumbs. It was a masterclass in terms of strength, in terms of focus, in terms of moving this country forward and protecting our freedoms. And so, you know, we are really ready at the DNC to make sure that we help make the contrast between the hope that Joe Biden brings and the chaos that we see coming from the Republican side. I mean, you think about this. We are months away from this major presidential election, and they just got rid of their chair to bring two really unqualified people to lead their party. So kudos to them. I'm the biggest cheerleader for Lara Trump. Go, girl, go. Do your thing. Spend all that money on those lawsuits. Because the DNC, we're going to be working on supporting the largest voter protection program we've had, making sure that our state parties are well-funded, making sure that we have boots on the ground so that we can do the voter education, the voter registration, the voter mobilization, and then to protect those voters once they cast their ballots.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the legal bills in a second, but I am sort of shocked by the fact that they're effectively announcing that the strategy here isn't investing in sort of grassroots efforts or, you know, whatever it might be, but rather poll watchers, which, you know, in previous years has in some ways been a placeholder for voter intimidation. As the chair of the DNC, does that worry you at all that the RNC is investing so heavily in individuals that may actually try and dissuade people from exercising their right to vote?
Well, you know, for years now, Alex, we've been investing because we know the dirty tricks that the Republican Party plays. They don't, you know, the last election, they didn't have a platform. So they weren't running on policy. The only thing that they can run on is fear. It is fear and intimidation, making people scared about voting. And then once they get to the polls, trying to scare them there. That's why we built the biggest voter protection program that we've ever had at the DNC. And we didn't start this year. This is something that we've been doing for the past few years. And we're going to continue to build on that. At the same time, we're still organizing. We're still educating our voters. We're still making sure that they have everything that they possibly need when they get to those polls. And we are going to, you know, buckle up. I know they're going to spend their money on lawsuits to save Donald Trump. But we are also saving our resources because if we have to take them to court to make sure that every American can cast their ballot and to do so unencumbered, then we'll do just that. But we're ready for them because we understand that this election is so important. This is about protecting the freedom of all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, independents, and everything in between.
You mentioned the legal bills. I should say that our own Vaughn Hilliard from NBC is reporting that Chris LaCivita, who's set to take over the sort of chief operating duties and is also a big player in the Trump campaign, he says the RNC will not use party funds to cover Trump-related legal expenses. No, LaCivita said in South Carolina. And then asked to clarify, he responded, effing no. I can't say that word on this family program. They seem pretty sure that they're not going to be using RNC funds to cover Donald Trump's legal bills. But setting that aside, what is, again, astounding to me is that RNC members are on the record saying, yeah, we'd like to use the RNC coffers to pay for Donald Trump's lawyers. I mean, what does that tell you about sort of the health of the Republican Party that it's so invested in one wealthy man's fortunes?
Well, not only RNC members, Lara Trump has said that she was intending to do just that and that was fine because the voters would be okay with that. Again, it is chaos. You look at Republicans at the RNC, it's chaos. You look at the Republicans in the House of Representatives, it is chaos. The Republican Party is about chaos. They're not about progress. You know, Joe Biden gets up every single day thinking about how can he improve the quality of life of all of America's people. Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican Party, either in the House or at the RNC, it's all about payback and retribution and revenge. That's not moving the ball forward. That's not improving the quality of life of the people in this country. And so that is the contrast that we have in this election. And bottom line, that is why Democrats and Joe Biden will prevail in November.
All I got to say is if I was a down ballot Republican and heard that the party organization was going to use its money to fund poll watchers or pay for Donald Trump's legal bills, I might be thinking about joining the DNC. The chair of the DNC, Jamie Harrison, thanks
for
again.
Come on in. Come on in. Big
the tent's open. Thanks for your time tonight. Great to see you, Jamie.
Thank you. Thank you, Alex.
Still to come tonight, strongman meets fanboy as right-wing darling Viktor Orban of Hungary meets his number one stan, Donald Trump. Plus, the Florida judge overseeing the federal prosecution of Donald Trump regarding his mishandling of classified documents has made a move that has a lot of court watchers very concerned. We're going to get into that next.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
As is customary, once former President Trump officially becomes the Republican Party's presidential nominee this summer, he will start to receive briefings from intelligence agencies. Now, this practice was started back in the 1950s by President Harry Truman to ensure a smooth transition to power. So technically, it's business as usual here. But this is the first time that a candidate will receive those briefings while under indictment for mishandling classified documents. And that underscores the importance of getting some resolution in the classified documents case itself. Now, we still do not know when that trial will actually happen. It has been 1 week since Judge Eileen Cannon heard arguments on scheduling that trial. Special Counsel Jack Smith wants the trial to start in July, while Trump's attorneys say the earliest the trial should start is August, although they would really prefer never. Judge Cannon's ultimate decision here has the potential to create chaos on Trump's legal calendar. The later she schedules her trial, the more likely she is to block any January 6 election interference trial from going to trial before the election. And now we have learned that next Thursday, Judge Cannon will hear arguments by Team Trump to dismiss the documents case altogether. David Latt joins me now. He's a former federal prosecutor, a columnist at Bloomberg Law, and the host of the Original Jurisdiction podcast. It's great to see you, David. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So how do you read the tea leaves on the fact that Judge Cannon is scheduling a hearing on a motion to dismiss before she's even set a trial date? Is that not a great sign for people who are hoping to see this trial come to fruition?
Well, she has a lot of work to get through because the Trump team has basically filed a kitchen sink of motions to dismiss. So she's kind of handling them piecemeal. She's going to tackle two of them in the coming week, but then there are a whole bunch after that.
Do you think the idea that is it a window into her psyche that the scheduled trial date remains so nebulous? Or should we just think this is a matter of housekeeping? She's going to tick through the list of these pretrial motions before she actually decides that.
I think she will probably set a trial date in between because, again, there are a whole bunch of these motions and there are a lot of moving parts here. So I think we'll get a trial date soonish, but we may also have a better sense of the trial date once she rules on some of these motions, which would affect the trial date. I don't think these motions are going to get granted, although with Judge Cannon, you can't be sure.
Well, yeah, and let's talk about that because she is accepting amicus briefs Which is friend of the court briefs, sort of supporter briefs for Trump's case as he tries to seek a motion to dismiss. Now, I always thought amicus briefs were like yearbook signatures. Like the more you had, the better it was, because it could just say like, I got a lot of people on my side. But she said that she thinks the amicus briefs may be of considerable help to her. It is not going out on a limb to say this is a judge who does not have a lot of experience in a case like this. And I am concerned, as I think other people might be, that she would be leaning too heavily on pro-Trump amicus briefs in a motion to dismiss.
So I wouldn't be, there are things to worry about here, but I don't know that I would be super worried about that. That language comes from the rules in the Supreme Court regarding amicus briefs, and there's not a similar rule for district courts or trial courts where Judge Cannon is. So it's kind of like a copy-paste thing. I think she's basically just saying, okay, let him in, it's fine. Now look, she may be quite susceptible to the argument in those briefs, which is that Jack Smith is not lawfully appointed, but I wouldn't read too much into her agreeing to have them filed.
Do you, you said on the Stay Tuned podcast that you think Judge Cannon is on thin ice. There's been a lot of talk about whether she could be taken off this case entirely. Where do you think she stands now?
So I don't think Jack Smith wants to remove her. I think he would rather not do that because it is something of an extreme measure. She did get some adverse rulings from the 11th Circuit, including from Trump appointees twice. And so that was in the case, that was in the pre-indictment phase of this case when it was a civil case brought by Trump, totally bizarre kind of situation. She ruled in favor of him in a really wacky way. And so that's why I think if she does something else, you know, it's sort of like a three strikes and you're out kind of situation. But again, I don't think Jack Smith wants to do that.
That would theoretically slow things down, would it not?
Yes, exactly. They would have to reassign. They would have to find another judge. I think he's kind of keeping his fingers crossed, but I think we're also aware of the possibility that, yes, Judge Cannon could go rogue again.
Well, yeah, and I think that then there's the whole question of what she can do to the rest of the calendar. Let's just start this conversation with, or let's continue this conversation with an opinion you hold that I think is a hard one for people who seek accountability for Donald Trump to hear, but talk to me about your view on the chances that the federal election interference case actually goes to trial before November.
I think that's under 5%, really low. Of course, we now have this Supreme Court immunity appeal that's sort of gumming up the situation. That's probably not going to be decided by the Supreme Court until June. Then we do have some weeks or months of trial prep, as Judge Chutkan, who's presiding over that DC case, has stated. Plus, this Mar-a-Lago documents case could go to trial in July or August, in which case it would bump the January 6 DC case.
Is there any way the Mar-a-Lago case, that Judge Cannon can schedule the Mar-a-Lago case for the late summer, block the DC election interference case, and then delay the Mar-a-Lago case after that? I mean, I'm just looking for the worst case possibility. But is that possible?
Yes, because trial judges have a lot of discretion, have a lot of leeway in setting these trial dates, and something took longer than expected, ruling on the motions. There's the classified documents in this case are creating a lot of complexities. What you outline, Alex, could definitely happen.
Oh, my God. It's Friday night, David Lack. Please. Okay. Well, we're going to come back to you many times over, and perhaps your opinion will change as we get more information. I'm a sucker for optimism. David Lack, thank you for your time, sir. Great to see you.
Hey, thank you, Alex.
Coming up, he's the boss. He's a great leader. Those would be Donald Trump's words of praise tonight for Hungary's autocratic leader, Prime Minister Viktor Orban. We'll dive deep into ethno-nationalism. What is behind the right-wing obsession with strongmen? That is next.
What does Viktor Orban believe? Just a few years ago, his views would have seemed moderate and conventional. He thinks families are more important than banks. He believes countries need borders. For saying these things out loud, Orban has been vilified. Left-wing NGOs have denounced him as a fascist, a destroyer of democracy. So who's freer? In what country are you more likely to lose your job for disagreeing with the ruling class's orthodoxy? The answer is pretty obvious, though if you're an American, it is painful to admit it, as we have discovered. With that, here's Viktor Orban.
That was Tucker Carlson reporting live from Budapest in 2021. He made the trip to interview the country's prime minister, Viktor Orban, who has governed Hungary since the year 2010. During his decades in office, Orbán has made Hungary what he calls a model of illiberal democracy. He has cracked down on immigration. He has closed the country's borders to asylum seekers. He has outlawed any display or discussion of LGBTQ content to minors in school and in the media and in books. He has curbed the freedom of the press and the independence of the judiciary. He has bent the country's political system to his will indefinitely. And now Prime Minister Orbán has become an icon among American conservatives. Starting in 2022, the Conservative Political Action Conference, which you might know better as CPAC, hosted its first annual conference in Budapest with a big headliner, Viktor Orbán. In his speech, the prime minister recommended that America air Tucker Carlson's Fox News show 24/7, which is one idea. Tucker Carlson also spoke at that conference. In 2023, CPAC held a second conference in Hungary, and this time Tucker Carlson stayed home. But lest anyone think he had lost his enthusiasm for illiberal democracy, Tucker Carlson put those concerns to rest.
Greetings to CPAC Hungary and to all you Americans in the audience. You are very brave. I wish I was there in Budapest. If I ever get fired and have some time and can leave, I will be there with you. But in the meantime, Godspeed. We are thinking of you and cheering you on.
Now, I should note that while that message aired in May of 2023, just a week and a half after Tucker Carlson was fired from Fox News, it was apparently pre-recorded. And so, true to his word, once he was actually fired, Tucker Carlson traveled to Hungary later that summer to interview his friend, Viktor Orbán. So it seems that Hungary is a really popular travel destination for the right-wing MAGA crowd. They cannot get enough of the place. And the admiration appears mutual. In 2022, Orbán not only got to join CPAC's main stage in Dallas, he was the opening act.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is how we fight. A speech by Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orbán.
If that sounded more like the music of from a UFC cage match than a conservative political action conference, you could be forgiven. But in that speech, Viktor Orbán did promise a sort of battle plan, a lesson for American conservatives on how to import Hungarian autocracy.
I am an old-fashioned freedom fighter. Progressive liberals didn't want me to be here because they knew what I would tell you. Because I'm here to tell you that we should unite our forces. Because we Hungarians know how to defeat the enemies of freedom on the political battlefield. I am here to tell you that our values, the nation, Christian roots, and family can be successful in the political battlefield. Perhaps our story can help you keep America great.
Today, Viktor Orbán was back in the United States. Despite the fact that he is a sitting world leader, Prime Minister Orbán did not go to Washington, D.C. or meet with anyone from the White House. Instead, Viktor Orbán went to Mar-a-Lago. And that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about who Viktor Orbán is betting on here, or at least whose vision most closely aligns with his. If there was any doubt about whether Donald Trump felt the same way, well, he cleared that right up tonight.
There's nobody that's better, smarter, or a better leader than Viktor Orbán. He's fantastic. He's the, as you know, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and does a great job. He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be, and that's the end of it, right? He's the boss.
He's the boss. I'll talk to Jacob Heilbrunn, author of America Last, The Right's Century-Long Romance with Foreign Dictators, about Trump's Republican Party and its embrace of autocracy, coming right up next. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán wrapped up his visit to the United States tonight, not with a sit-down in the White House with President Biden, but with a visit to Mar-a-Lago for a confab with one of his biggest fans, Donald Trump. That comes one day after Orban met with Trump whisperer Steve Bannon and participated in a discussion with the president of the Heritage Foundation, the conservative think tank. Those moments were apparently so memorable that Prime Minister Orban made a sizzle reel of them for his Instagram followers. Now, if there was any misunderstanding about the point of Orban's visit, check out the title of his panel yesterday, The Future of Relations Between the U.S. and Hungary. And from the looks of it, the prime minister is very much hedging his bets on a future that involves Donald Trump. Joining me now is Jacob Heilbrunn, editor of The National Interest and author of the new book, America Last, The Right's Century-Long Romance with Foreign Dictators. Mr. Heilbrunn, thank you so much for being here. And this book is coming at such an important time. I'd love if you could talk a little bit about the sort of relationship that I think national security hawks have been examining in recent days between Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban, and Donald Trump, and the degree to which, as The Guardian reports, there are legitimate fears that Orban could use his access to the Kremlin to effectively promote Russian propaganda, especially regarding Ukraine, to Donald Trump.
Well, Donald Trump has not been monogamous in his love for foreign dictators. He has his bromance with Vladimir Putin. Now he has a man crush on the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. And for Orban, Trump is a deliverance because it allows him to use his small landlocked country in Hungary and play the role of intermediary between Putin and Trump. And the question today, the most important question hanging over this meeting with Trump at Mar-a-Lago, is what did Orban communicate to him about the future of Ukraine and Putin's intentions? Because Trump has announced that he could solve the Ukraine crisis in 24 hours, which essentially means handing it over on a silver platter to Vladimir Putin. It would be very interesting to learn exactly what Orban told Trump today.
Yeah, well, we will probably soon find out, because when Donald Trump says something, the Republican Party usually falls in line. Beyond just Ukraine, though, it feels like Orban's style, if you will, of illiberal democracy is more easily mapped onto the politics of the Republican Party compared to Putin. Can you just talk a little bit about the way Orban governs his country and how Republicans and why Republicans have so thoroughly embraced it?
Definitely. I was at CPAC last year, though I was banned from attending, and the speakers were worshipful about Hungary. What do they admire? They admire that there is no independent media in Hungary anymore. It has been sold off to Orban's cronies. The judicial system has been eviscerated. They have elections in Hungary, but they're a sham. All of these things serve as a blueprint for Trump's own designs in the United States. He has said that Orban and I are almost like twins. And I don't think anyone should have any illusions. If Trump were to come to power, he would try to implement what Orban has done in Hungary, which means not shooting, not killing people, throwing them out of the windows, as Putin does, but a much more subtle form of eviscerating American democracy and, above all, the rule of law.
I do wonder what you think about, it's not just sort of the MAGA crowd. There are kind of Republican institutions like the Heritage Foundation, which has always been arch conservative, but used to be a place where neocons went. They are now hosting Viktor Orban. And there seems to be a sort of meeting of the minds happening there. And what are the implications more broadly for a part of the Republican Party that has been less obviously MAGAfied?
Well, it's no question that the Heritage Foundation made a conscious decision to jump onto the MAGA bandwagon, and it did start as an insurgent movement inside the conservative movement and inside the Republican Party. In a sense, actually, it's returning to its roots. What I try to show in the book is that for the past 100 years, there has been this tradition in the Republican Party of dictator worship. So it's not totally a surprise that Trump and the Heritage Foundation would embrace this. In fact, it's the culmination of an older Republican tradition.
Yes, the Paul Weyrich and the entire sort of grassroots new right movement that was born in the late 70s and early 80s are they're back, if you will. It's a righteous sort of battlefield soldier mentality of taking no prisoners and seizing the day. And I just wonder, you know, as we talk about these parallels between what happened before and what is happening now, You spoke to the Washington Post about the connection between the fascists and the isolationists in and around World War II and some of the positions that Republicans are taking today vis-a-vis Ukraine. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. We're hearing the exact same language. In the late 1930s, we were told that Great Britain was doomed to defeat and that we should take the side of Nazi Germany. And today we are told Ukraine is doomed to defeat and we might as well cut a deal with Vladimir Putin. Nothing could be further from the truth. If we aid Ukraine, it will win this war. But you have these same defeatist appeasement voices that we heard then. We hear them now. They were wrong then. They're wrong today.
The echoes should be chilling. Jacob Heilbrun, author of America Last, The Right's Century-Long Romance with Foreign Dictators. It is an essential read right now. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That is our show for tonight.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona.
And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Exco, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.